cannabis belongs fairly to the few, but about 6 billion people no doubt will agree, this world is our home, not your property, it's the commons, our right of birth. And you would enclose the land all around the earth, our future is your downfall, when we cut this ball and chain. You'd sacrifice the public good for your private gain. With our sweat we built the railroads, built cities on the shore.
Good morning and welcome to Corporations and Democracy for May 10th, 2019. This is the program that examines how corporations dominate our democracy and what citizens are doing to replace corporate dominance with true democracy. I'm Steve Scalmanini with co-host Annie Esposito. It's been a half year since the campfire devastated the city of Paradise, California, and 1.5 years since the Tubbs Fire burned 5,000 homes in mostly Sonoma and Napa counties, and the Redwood Complex Fire burned 500 homes here in Mendocino County, with both with some fatalities. And the causes of these fires seems to be aging electrical infrastructure, for which maintenance was deferred and neglected by its owner, Pacific Gas and Electric Company, PG&E. So today, we'll be looking at PG&E after the fires and what's next for it that will be different from how it's been doing business. Our guest is Mindy Spatt, Communications Chief for the Utilities Reform Network, that's TURN, T-U-R-N, which is the only independent consumer advocacy organization focused on utilities, such as electricity and telecom companies, throughout California. Ms. Spatt coordinates TURN's media and online advocacy and oversees press relations in the writing of and production of TURN publications. She joined TURN as Media Advocacy Director back in 1998 after working as a legal writer for at California Continued Education of the Bar. Her previous advocacy experience includes work on behalf of women prisoners and a stint as a union organizer. She is also a published essayist and freelance writer whose work has appeared in numerous newspapers and magazines. Her BA is from the State University of New York, and she holds a law degree from Antioch School of Law. So let's see what's next for PG&E after the fires. Mindy Spatt, welcome to Corporations and Democracy.
Thanks, Steve. Great to be with you.
I wonder if you want to, just to start out, is there anything else you would like to say about your organization, TURN?
Sure, thanks. Just that we've been around for 45 years, and some of your listeners may not know that we actually started in Marin. Our founder was a middle-aged woman, Sylvia Siegel, who was just really pissed at PG&E, and that's how TURN began. We now have 21 employees and an office in San Francisco, a satellite office in San Diego. And for the past 45 years, we've worked to protect customers' pocketbooks and the planet at the same time, holding utility companies accountable and resisting their calls for higher rates, which come as regularly as sun and rain.
Yeah, and they're a big, powerful company also. I mean, in addition to being a power company, they are huge. You sent me almost a book about what their financial distributions are in the way of personnel and charities that they donate to. It was amazing. Do you want to talk about the size of this corporation?
Well, I think what's really, when customers hear PG&E claiming that it's bankrupt, that it can't afford to, trim our trees or what have you, the company's desperate for money, it's running to the PUC demanding rate hikes, they would be shocked to realize how much money this company has and how it spends it. And, top of the list is these huge executive pay packages that include stock options. So right there you see that the people in charge of this company have a double profit motive. It's not just that their board of directors is pressuring them to keep the stock price high. They themselves benefit when it is. And you can go right down the line and see. I think in the year that I sent you, Annie, that they had some millions and millions of dollars in outside attorneys. That's beyond what they spent on in-house attorneys. They give political donations. They give to all sorts of community groups. But believe me, they want something in return.
Yeah, I think they have a new manager now, or CEO, I'm sorry. But between this one and the last CEO, their interim was, again, one of the attorneys for PG&E. So they're really in that mode for sure.
And, you know, not just that, but, I mean, from a normal person's perspective, did the last CEO do her job correctly? No, because they continued their pattern of criminal negligence. So why do you then get to keep collecting this fat salary and get all these benefits, and then then after you mess up, you leave with a golden parachute? So we fully expect the same thing to happen with the next CEO.
And does the PUC have any influence on that?
Well, that's a really good question. The PUC could have more influence over PG&E, at least Turn's view. We don't really feel like there has been stringent enough regulation. And outside of these outrageous, outrageous pay packages and everything else that PG&E does, most importantly, the PUC hasn't really overseen their wildfire mitigation plans or their tree trimming, and look how badly they've done it. It seems to us that that would be the first priority for the Public Utilities Commission, is to make sure that PG&E stops its pattern of criminal negligence. That's a pattern going back to 1994, when they first had burned down a town in Northern California, Rough and Ready. They burned a lot of that town. That was the first time we know of. So why the PUC has been basically just sort of giving PG&E free rein for all these years is just a mystery to us.
Just looking at those salaries, the Cuban-American woman that was the head of the CEO of PG&E until they just did the switchover, she was carrying over $7.5 million a year.
Right, and to be fair, I mean, they paid most of their male CEOs more.
I'll admit that. I was going to ask you that.
But again, this is for most of us, we would think, wow, if your job is to provide safe and reliable electricity, and what in fact you do is kill people, then that's an awful lot of money to be paid for failing at a job.
Yeah, I would say so.
You mentioned this goes back to 1994, and then you also mentioned the stock options, and that just makes me think of a time, perhaps before that, when PG&E was the sort of a steady dividend provider, a safe place to put stock, mm-hmm. and was not. I mean, stock options wouldn't have been an issue back then, I don't think. That's my impression, but I don't know as much as you will. It was not about raising stock price. It was about dividends and steady growth, this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Can you comment on that? Because that was something where sort of the middle classes would invest in PG&E stock back in the 70s, or 60s, whatever, when I was a kid. And it was just a steady thing to do, a safe place to a stock to buy, this kind of thing. It wasn't volatile, and which means stock options wouldn't have been an issue, wouldn't have been a benefit.
Right. So, yeah, you're right. I think there's been a real change even in the time I've been here in the last 20 years. And what I can tell you is, yes, the image of the PG&E shareholder who is a small investor, perhaps a retiree, that is not the reality anymore. 85% of PG&E is owned by investment firms. And, you know, and really they want one thing and one thing only. And so there's, that whole system, and that's sort of been the pattern, unfortunately, has been that they'll do anything for profits. Right now, PG&E is asking for a higher rate of return on their investments, which is something that goes right out of our pockets into the pockets of their shareholders, mm-hmm. in this case, investment firms. So that's what it seems to be all about. And, you know, I think that's why so many customers are asking, what exactly is going on here? Like, how are we somehow, we need PG&E. Even if you go with a CCA, you're in these distribution systems. So why is it that we somehow have to prop up these financial firms with bills that we need electricity? It's not an optional service. We have to have it. And this has been again and again. Remember that after the San Bruno explosion, it turned out that PG&E had basically lied on the pressure test for the pipeline because it was cheaper to do it the other way. And so that was a completely avoidable explosion where people were killed. 8 people were killed.
Now, that was discovered afterwards, and were you guys involved in that discovery and such?
Well, what we were mostly involved in was fighting back against PG&E's claims that, yeah, not our fault, or something that you said before I wanted to mention about aging infrastructure. Mm-hmm. Like, that was what they first said after San Bruno. They tried to claim, well, the pipeline was just old, or somehow it wasn't their fault. Well, I can tell you, Steve, I have purses that are older than that pipeline, and they're still in one piece. Seriously. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it turned out, no, it was not an issue of an aging infrastructure. It was an issue of PG&E's negligence. And that's exactly what appears to have happened in the Camp Fire as well. So this is the kind of thing that turned in our media work, but also then we're going to fight back on something like that because we don't see that the evidence is there. What we've seen with the tree trimming again and again, criminal negligence. It's not that their system, we keep hearing about system hardening. No, it's about negligence.
Mm-hmm. You know, and there's... I wanted you to finish your thought. I did want to also bring up the fact that some people think this never should have happened to begin with. I know the Bay Guardian newspaper in San Francisco mm-hmm. fought for years that it should be a public utility. And as a matter of fact, Hetch Hetchy, which is where this all began, was designed to be run by the local government. And somehow it ended up with this big corporation between the people and the electricity and the water. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, I only know a little bit of that history, and certainly in the time I've been here, most notably a few years ago with Prop 16, I mean, it's been quite clear that PG&E will do absolutely anything to stop CCAs and any kind of public power, because we've seen it, and Turn was really a leading force in fighting back against Prop 16, which was, you know, PG&E's basically attempt to enshrine their monopoly into the Constitution.
Yeah, when was that again? That's like 10, 15 years ago, was it, or...?
10 or less. It's hard to remember. They've done so many bad things.
Okay. And that's when they tried to get an initiative, or there was an initiative on the ballot, sponsored by PG&E and the other utilities from Southern California, to prevent any further municipal power companies or something like that?
Yeah. Through, I think it was literally a constitutional amendment, if I remember right. Mm-hmm. In any case, it's one of the proudest accomplishments of the time I've been at TURN is certainly that we fought that off. And we managed to get that defeated, although I think they spent $50 million to our $1 million. Mm-hmm. So we're really proud of that. And that's just a perfect example of a company that whose priority is always profit. What was that about? It's about protecting their profits. And And what do they do with that? Now we see with this bankruptcy and with these wildfires, they're just going to come to the customers again and again and again to pay for everything.
I'd like to talk a little bit about just a moment to explain the community aggregations that Prop 16 would make that impossible. And there's localities like Marin that use that. And that's a way for people to control their own power, right? And so they put all this money in to keep localities from being able to do that. That's what Prop 16 was about.
Yeah. And as I said, it was defeated. And it was just, that was part of the history that Steve was referring to earlier of a long history of PG&E using its money, which basically comes from us. We're the only source of money it has. So whatever money it has comes from us, and then they take that money and use it to basically fight us, fight customer groups who want public power. But the thing that people should understand is even if you are like, I'm part of SF Clean Power, and if you're part of one of the CCAs, I know there's one in Sonoma, I'm not sure if there's one up where you are, you still pay PG&E's distribution and transmission rates, and those are, in fact, the rates we're going to see all these rate hikes, the rate hikes that PG&E is demanding right now. Whether you're with a CCA or not, you'll pay them.
Yeah.
Because the CCA power still comes from some remote distance over PG&E's lines.
Yeah, right? We still need the infrastructure.
Exactly.
By the way,
there's only one, and that's sort of like one of the reasons why we've had a regulated monopoly, because there can only you can't have really more than one distribution and transmission system. It's too expensive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, regulated being a flexible word there, but go ahead.
One option that TURN has floated, but again, no one in the state is stepping up, would be for a state takeover of the transmission system. Mm-hmm. That's something we had looked at before, and there's sort of a clearer path for that than a full takeover of the company, because mm-hmm. it doesn't seem like any existing state agency would even want it.
Yeah. So I want to get a little more historical here. You talked about the San Bruno gas line explosion that killed 8 people, and that was negligent, so they were not keeping up the lines. Before San Bruno, there was Hinkley, and I think a lot of people might have heard of a movie based on what happened in Hinkley around PG&E.
And honestly, I probably don't know much more than you do, Annie, on that one. But yeah, you just see again and again a company that doesn't, you know, that puts people last, you know. I mean, we say put people before profits, but PG&E is really a classic example of putting profits before people. What's so disturbing about the Hinkley situation, again, is how hard customers had to fight to get justice from this company, which supposedly exists to serve us, and as I said, it has only our money. The only source of money it has is us.
So they should be nice to us, huh?
Well, you would think, and yet we see just the opposite again and again.
Well, this Hinkley thing was even, in a way, worse than the lack of maintenance. This was like proactively contaminating the
environment. Yeah, clearly willful.
Yes, right.
Well, in the same attitude that says let's falsify this record on this pipeline, or most recently I think it was revealed that they were falsifying records on digging near pipelines just recently. So you see that same attitude, which is, you know, basically like, you know, too bad, customers.
Mm-hmm.
We'll do what we want, and you'll pay the price.
So in Hinckley, they were dumping hexavalent chromium into the environment, which ended up in the groundwater. And Aaron Brockovich made a movie about that, and then PG&E became famous. But then she is now involved with a group of lawyers fighting for the rights of fire victims. So she's come back to battle PG&E once again.
Right. Yeah, I saw that. And of course, you know, what was interesting is that they were not found liable in the Tubbs fire. And they, of course, chose to go into bankruptcy anyhow, after running around screaming how they were going to be liable in both. And now with it, certainly things are moving toward, it appears that they're going to be liable in the Camp Fire. And that's, you know, we believe why they ran into bankruptcy court with the help of the PUC, I might add, beforehand, before they even amassed the liabilities, because once again, they seem almost driven to screw their customers over. So what's the effect of the bankruptcy? It means that the victims of the Camp Fire are going to have to wait and end up getting paid less.
So the PUC, in this case, they should have waited till all of the decisions about liability or not are in before letting them...
Well, the PUC gave them that debtor-in-possession financing, and that just means that PG&E can borrow against what are basically public assets like its hydroelectric system. I think the big problem with that was... It happened at what was called an emergency meeting of the PUC, the emergency being that PG&E had decided to file for bankruptcy before its, and I know this is getting a little, like, convoluted, but they're also a convicted felon. They were due at a hearing on probation violation, and it appeared that they wanted to get that bankruptcy filing in before they went to criminal court. And the PUC just basically said, oh, sure, we'll have an emergency meeting for you, and of course we understand you need this, and we'll give it to you. I mean, let's see that commission move that fast on behalf of customers sometime. Well, because it took them years to come up with a wildfire mitigation plan, and they dragged their feet on all sorts of things, like penalizing the utilities when they do anything wrong. But so PG&E could have declared bankruptcy anyhow, but the PUC made it easier for them.
So how captured is the PUC these years?
Well, it seems like everyone, the state legislature certainly, and the PUC has drank the Kool-Aid that says too big to fail, and that they're somehow perceiving PG&E as too big to fail, and doing everything imaginable to prop it up. Last year, the legislature voted for a bailout for them. Thinking that this would prevent it, but like the legislature talked for months about how they couldn't let PG&E go bankrupt, they passed the bailout. Well, PG&E went bankrupt anyhow. And the legislature is still talking bailout for this year.
What kind of money are we talking about in the bailout?
$30 billion. And the PUC also. So in Turn's view, PG&E's already failed. They've killed close to 100 people. They failed. And that the PUC and the legislature also seem to accept the idea that somehow these investors need to be satisfied at the expense of, like, hardworking people who are struggling just to afford basic electricity.
Can you relate that point back to the deregulation of the 1980s, I believe it was?
Sure. Yeah, that was actually, it was the 90s, and I think I can relate it in a couple of ways. First of all, in that also, just it was the same kind of situation in Sacramento that it's been with PG&E. Enron came to California and sold the legislature a bill of goods about deregulation. Now, your listeners may know this because you're an corporate accountability show, but the push for deregulation never, ever, ever comes from customers. It always, always, always comes from the industry, and that tells you a lot right there.
Well, yeah, yeah, it's about
but
a
they
dollar.
Bought, they bought what Enron was selling, hook, line, and sinker. I mean, deregulation was simply a bad, a really bad policy, and so it enabled these companies to jack up prices. And mind you, you'll hear sometimes people say, energy crisis, we never had an energy crisis, we had a greed crisis. Mm-hmm. It's not that we didn't have power, it was shipped out of state in order to jack up the prices.
Yes,
so,
manipulated
a bad policy. After that bad policy failed, PG&E did, again, chose bankruptcy, chose it, just as they've chosen it this time. And who do you think ended up paying $8 billion in extra charges?
Oh, the public, surely.
Exactly. That came out of the bankruptcy court, and then the PUC approved it.
Mm-hmm.
So, fast forward to now, we're once again looking at, and mind you, in that first bankruptcy, shareholders, for the customers ended up getting $8 billion in charges, shareholders took about $1 billion, and you know, we're getting profits again in a year or two.
Mm-hmm.
No problem. Fast forward to today, once again, PG&E has chosen a bankruptcy court as its preferred venue. Once again, PG&E is saying it has all this debt and the only people who can pay it are their customers.
Mm-hmm.
One difference is that the debt this time is 100% of PG&E's own making. Okay, so mm-hmm. the last time they were looked on more sympathetically, like, oh, poor PG&E, they, you know, deregulation caused this problem.
Mm-hmm.
This time, PG&E's debt is completely of its own making. But again, in the bankruptcy court, customers are at risk.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that they argue is that their insurance is going up because of the recent wildfires, and it's going to be going up 140%, and so, of course, they have to pass that along to customers.
Well, that could be true, if not for the fact that, again, if their insurance is going up because they've been found liable, it's because they were negligent, and in that case, that's not a cost that should be passed on to customers. That's a cost that should come out of profits, not rates.
Well, and the insurance company. That's why it's there.
well, yes, but again, PG&E, yes, if you get, like, if one of us, if we have insurance and we keep getting in accidents, our insurance rates go up. If PG&E keeps starting fires, its insurance rate goes up, but it's a sort of long-standing principle of utility law that customers don't pay for the utility's mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So to the extent the insurance costs are because we're talking about a criminal felon, a repeat offender with a history of negligence and convictions for it.
Mm-hmm. Let me
so
take a moment.
Anything coming out, any higher cost coming out of that should be borne by their shareholders.
Mm-hmm. Let me remind listeners, we're speaking with Mindy Spatt, the communications chief for the Utilities Reform Network. That's TURN, TURN, talking about PG&E. What's the future of PG&E after the fires? If you'd like to call in to ask any questions or comment, the number here is 895-2448 in area code 707 here in Philo, California.
Yeah, so you've come up with kind of almost a laundry list of all the different ways that PG&E is wiggling out of their responsibility to their customers. There's the bailouts, and there's bankruptcy, and there's DIP financing, and there's these emergency meetings that happen so fast people can't organize around them. Do you want to talk a little bit about that overall?
Well, and there's numerous rate hikes on the table as well. And that is kind of right now where we think that, you know, customers can make a difference. And one difference you can make certainly is by supporting us here at Turn, because we're going to be fighting this. So right now, PG&E has like three or four different tracks going at the PUC where they're trying to raise rates. One is what's called their general rate case, and there'll be public hearings on that coming up pretty over the summer. And I'm sure there'll be one in Santa Rosa, and we'll be posting on our website as soon as that's finalized. Another thing is something called this cost of capital case, and that's literally money that goes straight to shareholders that they want to charge us. Then they've got their wildfire mitigation plan, let alone the liabilities for the campfire. So while, you know, on the big picture, everyone wants to see change, in the small picture, we at Turn know that we have to fight these rate hikes as they come up.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of recourse do you see for all the fire victims right now with the PG&E doing this bankruptcy dance?
Well, you know, certainly I believe that they are part of the creditors committee in the bankruptcy. It's just, again, like, if you're contrite, if you know, as PG&E appears to know, that this fire was your fault, you know that it killed 88 people, you know that people are homeless because of it, you know, like, the community is destroyed, the schools, the stores, everything. Why then, do you choose bankruptcy when you know that the main impact of it is going to be to screw those very same people over again?
Yeah.
We don't accept that they had to do that. We think that was a business strategy designed more to protect their bottom line than their customers, and it's just disgusting.
Well, so in the bankruptcy court, would they just be expected to pay at a later date and delay this, responsibility and actually payment to the victims for a few years or a few additional years, or can they just skip out on it completely, possibly?
Well, you know, I honestly can't answer that. I'm not sure. I believe that it's possible that customers get less through the bankruptcy court than
mm-hmm.
than maybe they'd otherwise get. But I honestly don't know. But what we do know, again, is that this is PG&E's chosen venue, and you can be sure that if it's their chosen venue, it's because it's best for their investors, not because it's best for their customers.
Yes, and I know you've expressed doubts, as have other people, that they really are bankrupt, despite all the liability. One of the things that you hear a little bit about is that PG&E might slim down and maybe sell off their natural gas operations. What would you think about them doing that?
Well, I guess it really depends. I mean, we certainly don't want to trade one bad corporation for another. So I think what worries us is who would buy it. It's not like we're attached to PG&E at all. And again, you know, PG&E is its own poster child for why it shouldn't be allowed to continue. No, we could never make them look as bad as they make themselves look almost every day. But at the same time, who would buy it? Would it be San Diego Gas and Electric? We don't know that they'd be better. It's interesting. I actually, if I can switch it up a bit and ask you guys what you think, because this is an area of expertise for you, there's a lot of talk at the PUC about the quote-unquote culture at PG&E and how it has to change to be more focused on safety. But I don't know if that makes sense, because isn't the corporation's culture always putting profits first?
Well, that is one of the issues we deal with regularly here, is that the way the system works and has developed over generations of law and such, as particularly case law, is that corporations can get away with this kind of stuff, and there's a motivation to do so, and it's built into the system, not the way the system is written per se, but the way it's developed through the suits over 100 years. So yes, they have a financial motivation to do what they're doing.
Well, there is something called a B Corporation now that people are trying to put together, and there's actually a lot of them in Mendocino County. I mean, not a lot, but compared to the rest of the world, where the corporate paperwork is phrased in such a way that the bottom line is not the only consideration.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's an aberration right now, but it shows that it can be done if there was the will to do it.
And well, I suppose, but isn't it like, when you hear this talk about the culture of PG&E, you think like, well, they're a felon, a criminal on probation, and like, are you talking about like some consciousness racing group or something? Mm-hmm. I don't really understand this corporate culture idea.
No, I didn't really mean that about PG&E. I meant that, like Steve was saying, legally, corporations have that argument. We have to do the best for ourselves. So there is definitely this corporate movement among some smaller companies that the bottom line is not the only consideration, and that it's legal for them to operate outside of that phraseology.
Let me be more specific.
Well, that's interesting, because I mean, maybe the PUC should consider changing that financial responsibility somehow, so that they don't have to put profits first. I don't know.
Uh-huh. Let me be more specific about the scenario from just a minute ago. They're acting as if the worst thing that could happen to them is that they are found culpable, responsible, and and they'll have to pay for the damages themselves, and that means their stock will take a hit and drop in price. That's the worst thing that could happen. I mean, they're acting like that's the worst thing that could happen, which in corporate America, maybe that is. But so they're doing everything they can to avoid that and trying to get someone else to pay the bill.
Right. Yeah. And you know what? What's incredible is if you watch their stock price, it goes up every time any public official says, sure, we'll bail them out. And then they look guilty on something else. It goes down again, or it's revealed that they lied again. It goes down. Another public official says, oh, no, we'll have to bail them out. It goes up.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't know. So, yeah, it's hard to accept that whole scenario. And, the other thing that they're saying, to be clear, is that what the whole problem is going to be is that they won't be able to borrow money, and they'll have a higher borrowing rate, and they want to pass this higher interest rate on to consumers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's actually the sort of policy argument they're making, not even that, and that's why they're insisting that they have to get a bailout, because otherwise, if they have to take it out of profits, the stock price stays low, and they get a bad credit rating.
Yeah. I can see that. I had another question on the same topic, and I'm thinking about the future here. And Annie talked about the possibility of selling off their natural gas operations, but that brings to me the issue of, well, what's the future of their natural gas operations in this area of we're still relatively early in the fight against to minimize damage from climate change, but that is largely a great amount of that is from natural gas heating and such, and the future is likely going all electric, which means the market for natural gas would likely be dropping. I'm not aware that it is right now, and there's probably still a trend toward replacing coal plants elsewhere in the country with natural gas, but in California, I wonder if that market would be likely shrinking in the coming years and therefore would affect their ability to sell off their natural gas operations anyway.
Well, I think what affects their ability to sell off their operations is their terrible, terrible reputation. Who wants to take something on that customers don't trust it? There's just no... Anyhow, I think that's probably the bigger problem there. It's hard to imagine that any sort of broad-scale electrification in Northern California is going to happen that fast. And again, where would the money come from? Because these kinds of programs, the PUC keeps wanting customers to pay for also. Well, we can't really afford both, can we? I mean, can we? Electrification is very expensive. Can we afford that on top of PG&E? And, just in their rate case alone, they're saying $20, it could go up $20 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And that's for gas and electric. But so... a lot of these state programs that are quote-unquote climate-related are being stuck onto utility bills.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just not, we're not sure that's sustainable, certainly not if customers are going to have to pay, $20 or more to have trees trimmed properly.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'm not saying we think it should be that way. I mean, this is stuff we should have been, and or to have pipelines tested properly, this is stuff we pay for every month.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the PG&E isn't doing it. So, it's hard to see where the money would come from for sort of massive electrification.
Some people are wondering if the bankruptcy would slow stop the decommissioning of Diablo Canyon. What do you think about that?
No, that there's plenty, plenty of money in that decommissioning fund. I've not heard anything about that being part of. I don't think they can take the money from the decommissioning fund and use that in the bankruptcy.
That's still on track. People shouldn't worry about that.
I don't think so. I've certainly not heard anything like that.
Well, good. I wonder if you want to take a moment to talk about who actually regulates PG&E. We're talking about the California, the state PUC, Public Utilities Commission.
Yes.
And then there's the federal FERC. And now on top of all that, there's bankruptcy courts. Who's actually managing all this?
Right, and there's also the criminal court because PG&E is a convicted felon on probation. And has recently been called in for probation violations. So, yeah, I think the problem is there's all these different agencies, and obviously the legislature has some oversight because they ordered the bailout. The PUC is appointed by the governor. Right now there are four members who were appointed by Governor Brown and one new member appointed by Governor Newsom. But the legislature has oversight, so consequently the governor has a role to play. The FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, is more involved on, it has more to do with the transmission part of it, because that's under FERC jurisdiction. There's also something called the ISO, the Independent System Operator. And I honestly can't say exactly what they do, but it has to do with moving electricity around the state. So they mm-hmm. have some role also. But, certainly the place where PG&E has to go when it wants to raise rates is the Public Utilities Commission.
So that's the main thing.
Yeah. And in the past, certainly during the previous president, the president now is Michael Picker, the previous president, Michael Peavy, was extremely corrupt and known to be in bed with the utilities. So the PUC also doesn't have a very good reputation because of that.
So,
and still, we haven't seen that level of corruption since then. Since the PV years, but we also don't see the commission saying no to PG&E very often.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was wondering if that's going to change under the new governor, but so far it seems to be the same situation.
Could you comment on how their situation right now would affect the ability of customers in general to move to cleaner energy? Again, back to the climate change issue that's on my mind these months.
Well, hard to say. I mean, obviously, some customers are choosing to do that through the CCAs, and it's just unfortunate that, as I said, we'll all pay these distribution and transmission rates regardless. You know, and it's hard to see that there would be a huge impact on individuals who might be choosing like something like solar panels.
Mm-hmm.
And what we always see and know is that the more efficient people can be in their homes and their businesses, the less of their money they'll have to give to PG&E. So there's a real benefit to trying to conserve and not wasting.
Mm-hmm.
What would be the ideal scenario? Should PG&E be broken up? Should it be replaced with a public power? What do you think would make a better situation?
You know, it's really hard to know. In theory, the idea of public power sounds a lot better, because when you look at the different municipal utilities in California, even in Northern California, it seems like they have better safety records and lower rates.
Yeah.
And so, not sure if that is the method to get there, but yeah, the ideal thing that we want is safer service and lower rates. And if a public entity can provide that, great. In the meantime, we had hoped to see the criminal court put PG&E into receivership. We'd still like to see that sort of some kind of outside authority to get in there and tell them what they're doing wrong, because they don't seem to either know or care. There's also, ideally, we would like to see PG&E treated like other felons and have its political rights taken away.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we have a call. Let me stop you there and see what our listeners had to say. Hi, you're on the air.
Great. Hey, I'm wondering if the utility got made public, the state agency, it would kind of become like Caltrans and very close to the construction industry, heavy equipment industry, very much, and it'd probably be populated with most of the same people now that work for the utilities. It would be somewhat answerable to the state and the public, but I just wonder how different it would be. Thank you.
Okay, mm-hmm. Thanks for your call. Okay, so he's comparing that to a Caltrans, which I guess was a negative, a negative comparison, I gather. What do you think about a big state bureaucracy here instead of PG&E?
Well, it's hard to imagine it could be worse. We don't think the problem is the workers. We think the problem is the management. We think management is sending the wrong signals and again, not providing the framework. We think the workers really want to do their jobs right. So in our view, the problem is on the top, and it's the management that needs to be changed much more than the workers.
Yeah, I would say that, because we used to have more workers up here, and they got laid off, and now if there's a fire, they have to be brought in. Hello, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. How about there is a state initiative on the ballot to upgrade utilities? That means so many lines are hanging here and there, and they can all be buried. And that initiative could revenue bond money.
Okay.
So I take my answer off the air.
Thanks for that. Okay, so what do you think about public paying for having undergrounded?
Have not really heard of that. Undergrounding is hugely, hugely expensive, so I guess I don't know. I think, yeah, that should be a ballot initiative. People should decide if they think it's worth it, but it's quite expensive.
Yeah, okay. So we've been going over some of the causes. I think most of it has to do with vegetation management and upgrades to wires. And the other thing we didn't talk about is cutting power during a fire threat.
Mm-hmm.
So that,
yeah. That's something that's being decided right now. And, this is PG&E we're talking about. Like, it feels like they can't operationalize anything correctly. So they did shut down the power in Napa when it turned out to be unnecessary. But more importantly, the complaints about what they did in Napa was not so much that they shut off the power, but the way they did it, their failure to keep customers informed, their failure to turn it back on fast enough. Then they made another bad call in Paradise and didn't shut it down. So first and foremost, again, we need oversight. We don't want PG&E to be the one to make the call.
So did you?
Because they always make a bad call. But what we do think is that this is something like an emergency measure, the de-energization thing. It's an emergency measure necessitated by PG&E's negligence and incompetence. It's not a good solution mm-hmm. for wildfires.
Okay,
we are bad out of time. Did you think we could take one more?
Well, I think we have time for a quick call.
Okay, quick question. You're on the air.
I just thought this whole discussion about all these fires and wires and all, and finally the mention solar panels. I don't know why we have to keep going on with all these wires. Solar panels, you don't have to have lines and wires and worry about lines on trees to create fires. So I think, we just have to get the solar panels up. I'm shocked every time I go to town that they're not all over the place, plastered over every roof and barn.
Okay, thank you. You got the last word there. Good point. Thank you so much. Okay, so that's a good thing to close on. Hey, how about solar panels? Do you want to comment on that? And then whatever you want to say to close about TURN for our listeners? Mindy?
Yeah, certainly solar panels are a good solution for some people. It's obviously not a solution for everyone at this point, just in terms of expense. But for some people, it's good. And, again, you have to just be careful because you don't necessarily get off the grid just because you have solar panels.
Yeah, agreed. So, so there's nothing on the immediate horizon then to facilitate additional clean energy implementation, in PG&E's current situation.
Like in our view, PG&E is very much on track with the renewable energy goals. Like we don't. That's just not one of the most troubling things in our view.
Yeah.
The state has a goal of 100% clean energy, and so far PG&E is on track to get there.
Okay, we're going to have to.
We don't think that's the problem, but we do think the problem is rate hikes. And if people visit www.turn.org, they can find out about these upcoming hearings. This will be posted in the next few days, and these hearings are a time for people to go and speak out. Some of the callers today bring those same comments when the PUC has its hearing in your area.
Okay, that's turn.org, TURN.org.
And thank you, Mandy Spatt, so much.
Thank you, Annie and Steve. It's great to be with you.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye. Okay, you've been listening to Corporations and Democracy, broadcast second and fourth Fridays from 11 to 12 here on KZYX. The next edition will be in 2 weeks, Friday, May 24th, with host Linda McClure, and I will be back on June 12th.
Not your property, it's the commons. I write up for-